36,000 miles above the lunar surface. She had left Alphonsus within an hour of Dan's escape, and now, after a sleepless night, was sitting uneasily in the passenger compartment of a regularly scheduled shuttle heading for Earth orbit. Weightlessness still bothered her. Although she was strapped into her seat, her innards still felt as if she were falling endlessly and her head was throbbing. The passenger compartment was very much like the interior of an airliner. The flight attendants even walked almost normally along the central aisle, thanks to Velcro slippers. Still, Jane fought down the queasiness in her stomach, the feeling of stuffiness in her sinuses, and her roiling emotions. "Damn Dan," she said to herself for the 100th time that hour. "And damn me for caring about his foolish, arrogant hide. Running away. What a stupid trick to pull. Where's he going to run to on the moon? He'll just get himself killed. That's all he's going to accomplish." "Well, what can you do about it?" she asked herself. "Is there any way you can help him?" She was surprised at her own question. "Help him? He's a fugitive from justice. How can I even dream of trying to help him? And when did he ever ask for my help? He ran away from me. He always runs away from me. We could have stayed on Tetiaroa together. But he didn't even give me the chance to tell him that I'd resign my council position if he'd quit Astro and retire peacefully. Now it's too late," she realized. "Now he's a fugitive in hiding. Maybe he's already dead. Good riddance. He's been nothing but heartache and pain to me ever since I met him. Time to forget Dan Randolph and get on with my life. No tears, no regrets. If he's not dead already, he will be soon, and there's nothing I can do about it, not a damned thing." She refused to cry, but suddenly her guts churned with acid and she grabbed for the wretch bag in the seat back in front of her. Catherine Williams sat in Dan's swivel chair and studied the data on his desktop screen. The takeover was proceeding smoothly. Each department and section of the company was functioning as it should. Somewhat raggedly, perhaps, in a few cases, but that was to be expected when there had been such an abrupt change in management. Now the computer system was patiently, remorselessly, thoroughly routing Dan Randolph's name and all his various access codes from every branch of Astro Manufacturing. Within a few hours, as far as the computer programs were concerned, Dan Randolph will cease to exist. It will be as if he never had existed, Kate thought. But where is he? She wondered as she leaned back in his chair. It was utterly comfortable. Its midnight black covering was something like butter-soft leather, but warm to the touch and gently yielding, so that it conformed to the contours of her body as if the chair had been custom-built for her alone. Kate smiled to herself. Not a bad idea, actually. Instead of going back to San Francisco, why not stay here and run Astro for the GEC? I can bring Kimberly up here. She'd be better off away from her old haunts once she's out of the rehab center. We'd both be better off up here on the moon. Kimberly away from her drug culture, and me a 250,000 miles away from Rafe. Gaetano was not a bad lover once they got down to the pleasure of lovemaking. It was the damned silly games he liked to play beforehand. He really didn't like women, Kate realized. No, it's not that exactly. He's afraid of women. He's got to put himself in a position of absolute power before he can get it up. What would Gaetano do if I told him I wanted to stay here and run Astro's operations for the GEC and bring Kimberly up here with me? That would just about break his hold over me. Would he care? He can always find some other woman to dominate. She shook her head, frowning. No, he wouldn't want to give up his power over me. Not unless I could give him something in return. Something he wants more than his feeling that he can control me. Something. The answer was displaying itself to her in the desktop screen. Dan Randolph. If I could deliver Dan to him, Rafe would let me have Astro as my reward. That would work. She broke into a happy smile as she leaned forward across the desk to reach the computer keyboard. I'll have Kim here safe. And Astro Manufacturing. Terrific. All I've got to do is find Dan Randolph. She began pecking at the keyboard with single-minded intensity, telling herself that it wouldn't matter if Dan was dead or alive. All she had to do was find him. Or his body.
"Are you sure this is going to work?" Dan asked dubiously.
"I've done it before," Big George's voice replied in his helmet earphones. "It's not as crazy as it looks."
It looked pretty crazy to Dan. He and George were climbing up one of the slim concrete pillars that held the cable car line, clambering in their spacesuits slowly up the steel ladder rungs embedded in the pole like a pair of ungainly oversized bear cubs struggling up a tree. Pops Tucker had remained in the shelter, too old and frail for the athletics that George was contemplating.
"It's simple," George said. "We wait at the top of the pole. The fucking trolley comes by. We jump down onto its roof, then climb down and enter it through the airlock. Nothing to it, practically."
The pillar looked about 10 meters high to Dan from the ground. Halfway up, climbing laboriously in the awkward pressure suit, it seemed more like 100 meters high. He leaned over to see the ground from inside his helmet. "Make it 200 meters, he said to himself.
"The main thing is the timing," George was explaining. "When I say to jump, jump. Don't want to miss the fucking bus. Even in this gravity, a 10-meter fall can break your bones."
Dan's back still hurt sullenly. At last they reached the top of the pillar. He clambered up beside George, and the two of them hung there like high-tech monkeys. Suddenly a new thought popped into his head. "Hey, once we're inside the trolley, how the hell do we get out again? We can't wait until it gets to the end of the line. There'll be people waiting for it there." He could not see George's face behind the heavily tinted visor of his helmet, but he heard the big man chuckle.
"We stop the bugger. That's what we do. Stop her and use the emergency escape line to get back to the surface."
"Then they know somebody's been aborted."
"Sure they know."
Inside his helmet, sweating from the exertion of the climb, Dan frowned with puzzlement. "But I've never heard of a trolley being hijacked."
"Doesn't happen very often," George's voice replied. "We don't do this every day, you know."
"But I would have been informed about it," Dan insisted. "My security people would have reported it up the chain of command to me."
"Maybe," said George. "Maybe not."
"I don't understand."
"Hold it. Here she comes."
Dan had to turn his entire upper torso to look in the direction of the cable, hanging tautly a few feet below them. It was still night on the moon, but there was enough earthlight for him to make out the bullet shape of the trolley whizzing along the cable toward them. "Cripes, it's coming fast. If we miss..."
"Jump!"
George yelled. Dan jumped. He seemed to hang in emptiness forever. Then he landed with a bone-rattling thud on the trolley's roof. His boots scraped and slid on the slick, hard surface, and he felt himself going over sideways in the dreamy slow motion of the moon's low gravity. He reached out for something to grab hold of, but there was nothing, not even thin air, nothing but vacuum. He was falling over the side, slipping like a man in a nightmare toward the ground rushing by so far below. Something grabbed him hard and yanked him back onto the flat surface of the trolley's roof. Dan lay on his belly, gasping. George's voice in his earphones sounded amused.
"I forgot to tell you. Grab one of the handholds on the roof when you land. Otherwise, you'll fall off."
"Thanks," Dan puffed, "for the advice."
"Come on, no time to waste."
"I'm too old for this," Dan said to himself. But, taking a deep breath, he slowly got to all fours. George was already clambering down the side of the moving trolley to work its airlock hatch. Dan got shakily to his feet. The car was moving along at a good 50 knots or more, he estimated. But there was no real sensation of movement. No wind, certainly. And the car seemed steady as a rock beneath his feet. A little vibration, but nothing much. If he didn't look at the ground hurtling past, it would be hard to tell they were moving at all.
"Come on," George called. "In we go."
Dan lowered himself down from the lip of the roof and swung into the open airlock. Within minutes, he and George were inside the main cab of the trolley. It was stuffed with crated mechanical parts and boxes of electronics equipment. George whistled happily.
"A fucking cornucopia."
He went to the display screen built into the front bulkhead.
"Can you work this?"
Clumping in his boots, Dan walked up beside him and pecked at the keyboard mounted on the wall. The car's manifest appeared on the screen.
Fair dinkum, mate.